This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Merci. Thank you with all my heart. Thank you, Aaron, who are a promise and not a threatening promise for once. And thank you, Jean-Michel, for being my friend, which is measured only through length of time and shared experience, including fires, alarms, etc. And thank you for that wonderful Slot Foundation, which is a tiny dream come true. Thank you, all of you, for your generosity and hospitality in that bush-ridden country. So thank you for being here in order to save the mouse. For being here in that kind of tiny temple of resistance and creation, where I think everybody strives to make the world grow less small. And thank you, Maria, for inventing a precarious room. Let me use that word, precarious, and relate it to its etymology, because you know that precarious relates to prayer. One has to pray that it doesn't disappear, and it's so precarious. We all of us here are very precarious, but bringing a number of precarious beings together is already a way of resisting destruction. What about Vera's room? Are we inside? Are we outside? Is it here? Is it there? I'll try to say a few words on our being inside outsiders in cities. But let me begin with an homage to the author from and of Dublin, who was both my hunter and my prey for so many years. I mean, to the thief from Dublin, to his translator and his trans-hater. By way of epigraph, I shall take my first steps in cities via a small detour through Finnegan's Wake, where, on page 301, there's an air of nostalgia for that city called Trieste that awaits us. Trieste, the at least triple city, where, as a young man, Joyce used to pass on languages, through languages, at the Berlitz School. And that's the quotation. Dear, and he went on to scribble, gentleman born, lady bred, he would pen for her, he would pine for her, how he would pet pun fun for all, with his frolicky frowner, so, and his glumsome grinner other so, and how are you waggy, my animal, his sorrowful. And Trieste, Trieste, ate I my liver. Se non è vero, o se non è vera, son trovatori. Oh, Jerry, he was so harried all. He was said fellow stifle. He was Mr. Mysterian, like a purit out of a pensioner with a government job. Whereupon I could stop my reading here, for everything is purer said in one go. How a city is like another one. How a language always speaks more than another language. How when I speak of my cities, I speak of Maria's cities and yours. That Babel is not Babel beaten, and that there is always more than one animal wagging at the end of a tail. And how, as a dog, I eat and gnaw at myself my own bone, as both a vulture and Prometheus, I tear my own liver to pieces. I'm going to tell you about my cities, my promised cities, but it's only a way of being metaphorical, because my cities are your cities and they can exchange. And now I wonder where I am, where am I, or who or where are you? Are we in Vera's room right now, or aren't we? How is Vera verily true to her name, or literally true? All of us, we are wandering letters, I could even say wandering Jew letters. We are anagrammed, or viragrammed. Myself, I am from Oran. I hope you know about Oran. If you don't, let me introduce you to Oran. That's a city in Algeria. Hope you will speak French, of course. Now I translate. I am from or, that means out, en, that means in. That's how I started in life, by being out in. And I usually go from or here, which of course you might consider as or. But in French, it's gold. And this particular small word is a world in itself of meanings, possibilities, as those who have read Mallarmé and Derrida know, and I was born with an or. Of course, then with an either. So I've always been going from or to or. And to start with, I must say that I am from without. I am, je suis, I am, je suis, and follow, je suis, to the letter and to the voice. And then I'm an adoring being. I could take all my life by her or its letters of gold. Letters came to me before the book. The first letters, the first sounds, were my city, my land, my family. Since I started feeling and turning my mind to thinking, I have not been able to distinguish the city theaters from the word theaters. Word and cities swap places, as you very well know, of course, in Philadelphia. I'm not going to anagram Philadelphia for you, because I'm sure you've done that 100 times. The city makes a theater for words, and the words make place, city, minds. The word city has always incited me to search for double. I write, I cite. To put it otherwise, I translate, you translate. I was born in translation, with translation, out of translation. And now and then I translate myself into or through or with works of art. For instance, meeting with Maria, I had a kind of new translation experience with the fantasies, the creative signs and letters of Maria. Everything I write and say here, first I say it in my head, straight away from my head to my fingers, as you see I write with pen. Everything that gets out and that I get out of, en, in, All that today stands in front of me, outside me, a few years ago, still stood back behind my thought, before me. If I point to my finger writing, to my handwriting, it's also because maybe if I relate to the work of Maria, among others, particularly, it is because I write paint. I'm a paint writer, actually. I use my fingers and not only my computers. I did not think of city. I was in it, and I was with it, with my cities. We were only one city which translated itself into 12 cities as well as into dreams of cities. Oran and myself are inseparable, and yet are we. Let me quote from a small text that I wrote along with Derrida in a book called Veils. Every day, she had to pass by the castle. Help came from the statue of Joan of Arc. That was in Algeria. The great golden woman brandished her flaming lance and showed her the way to the castle. By following the golden sign, she would finally get there. Until the day when? One morning in the square, there was nothing. The statue was not there. No trace of the castle. Instead of the sacred horse, a world of shadow, all was lost. Every step would increase the confusion. She stopped, petrified, deprived of the statue's help. She found herself stalled at the heart of the invisible. Everywhere, she saw this limitless, pale nothingness as thought by some false step she had entered, living into death. The here nothingness stayed, and no one. She seized up, fallen upright into the fathomless expanse of a veil, and voila, all that remained of city and time. The catastrophe had happened in silence, and now who was she? Alone. A little nail stuck into the gap. Later in the gap, someone abruptly came from the nothing, told her that things hadn't fled after all. They were definitely in their place. So was it she who could not see the statue or the castle or the edges of the world of the bus? As one can see, she cannot see where she is. She is so lost that she is in the third person of herself, far from me and I. Now, it does happen that we become third persons. She's lost in the lost city. Of the whole city, there only remains a remainder of gold, or she's outside, inside, and it will always be like that. And that's how Maria starts wandering through remainders of cities, pieces and bits that she picks up and tries to make a book of. But is it a book? And the word ville in French, this present, not cité, not city, not stadt, not ville, not ville, not domus in Latin, not domus aurea, neither family mansion nor house of gold, but villa of pleasures. Ville, expansion and extension of villa in Latin. In Algeria, we lived in the Clos Salambier villa, a strange way of naming a place in Arabic Algeria by a typically French name, since you may know that during the colonization, Algeria was overnamed, hypernamed in French, and particularly all the most important monuments or institutions would wear the population being unawares, but unconsciously, of course, receptive. After all those who had crushed Algeria, destroyed it, burnt it, tortured it, and all, for instance, all the high schools in Algiers bore the names of those generals and marshals who had conquered Algeria. Now, in Algeria, when used the word villa, the Latin word, our houses with gardens were gilded with Roman words or French words. Between Siti and myself, there has always been a veil. I said Oran in the first place, as one would say Oranos or Gaia. But Oran, let me pronounce it the way we did, has always already been complicated and occupied, contained, fabulated by whom and by what? By Osnabrück. Now, I hope you speak German. Now, Osnabrück is, you may know or may not know, it's a tiny city in Germany, in Hanover. And that was where my mother's family came from and escaped from in the time of Hitler. But before coming back to Oran, I shall call up the cities that live in me and that have made their nests, their knots, their walls and citadels in my mind and work, congenitally at first, then sometimes cultured, at first underground, then more and more overground, until they took control of writing, all unbeknownst to me. There they were, fermenting for decades, until the day when there was Osnabrück. Osnabrück became the title of a book of mine, which I didn't expect I would ever write. But before and ever since, there have been Algiers, Pompeii, Manhattan, Prague, in other words, Jerusalem, Babel, Ur, and even a little later, Elsinore and its ramparts. And, of course, London, where I was destined to meet Maria. All my cities have their mythical doubles, their models, and my roots or my uproots. I see I have omitted Paris. Hope you speak French. That's Paris is a bet. Hmm? Paris is, I haven't laughed. So, I have omitted Paris, that is, or Paris omitted me, I don't know. And this will call for an explanation. And I should not forget Strasbourg, which is also a city dear to my mind. Now, what makes a city be? The promise. But what does the promise promise? Threat, paradise, ruin, loss, reunion, salvation, destruction, the end of errancy, alas, the end of errancy, the end of history, no, expulsion, prohibition, exile, Ovid's Tristia, Mandelsham's Tristia, the no arrival, the no return, the no reunion. One does not come back, not in reality. By dint of not finding oneself or myself again, while coming back and not coming back, one produces cities which come back in dreams. Cities on the horizon, serial cities, pieces of cities, as in Maria's work on those walls which you'll probably wander around. By dint of repeating the names of the desired and never hoped for cities, one causes the movement of literature or painting or art. We say next year in Venice. You thought I was going to say Jerusalem, but it's in Venice in literature. But in order to get to Venice, you will have to fulfill 12 conditions and pay the full price for admission. You will go to Venice, but only without Albertine. It's the choice between the two caskets. One enters a city half dead. So there came a book of mine that called itself Osnabrück. Now, that was not done on purpose. I do not give names. They are given to the books. And it is very late, once the book has departed from me by some god or other. So there was a book which bore the name of a city. And conversely, maybe the book is a city. True, there are books that are kinds of cities, memoirs, archives, plans, monuments. Ulysses, as they say, takes place, as they say, in Dublin, which passes through Ulysses. In passing, the character Ulysses Homerizes and Odysseizes Dublin. In an imperceptible movement of comeback and haunting, of spectral colonization, of elevation and lowering, which reminds us, first of all, that a city is such only if it bears within its wall-girt sides the traces of another city, its ancestor, its archaic model. A city worthy of being sung always cites another city. What is beautiful and surprising is that when a city dies in order to be reborn, the same happens to it as to the Tibetan or Egyptian dead. It travels, transmigrates, reincarnates in a most faraway city, but one which can harbor it in its bosom, that is to say, receive it in translation through acquaintances or connivances which are either topological or thematic or literal and quite often small, tiny in appearance. So then there was a book which advanced under the title of Osnabrück. And the character that inhabits it is my mother, Eve Klein. Osnabrück's my mother's name as a native city. The name of a small city, then, in the province of Hanover, name totally foreign and impossible in French. The titles of my books actually always remain foreign to me, like the cities, no matter how I pretend to inhabit them. When I trust I can stay or enter a city, as I thought I would, for instance, a couple of days ago, arriving in Philadelphia, I immediately find myself arrested, usually. A city takes me, captures me, hunts me. I'm afraid of cities. So that was a city. Now, when I say Osnabrück, I no longer know whether I am in the book or in the city. This book, when French, was nearly not called Osnabrück. That would have been a French book suicide. Osnabrück, who would buy Osnabrück? For a book, I'm keen to stress, is somehow contained entirely in its title. Yes, that's the mystery. The title makes the being. Vera's room makes Vera and the room come alive, or Vera and the book come alive. The title, for me at any rate, is the essential and sublime translation of the book. Now, idea nearly didn't. And why? I analyze after the fact, Osnabrück, a barbarously sounding name. Just as Babel sounds well in all languages, Osnabrück is unpronounceable in French, like Sixou, actually. Osnabrück Sixou, what a name. More and more foreign, brutal, Brück. Six, scissors, etc., I know. Oh, phonemes, onomatopoeia. At the last minute, I clung to the principle of anti-cowardice loyalty that usually drives me. What is that? Well, precisely, it's my treasure and my heritage. I note that I do not have a book titled Oran. I did not do it on purpose. I said I would come back to Oran, at least in these pages. I'll come back to it. Whereupon came Manhattan, that we can share. It is then that this insistence of cities, of names, of books, of cities, of book cities, drew my attention. There appeared to me in fiction what I had always known and practiced in the theater. Places are powerful and decisive characters. They do half of fate's work. They are deities, active hidden powers. Places archive us and act upon us. Chance and necessity, to be born and to die. One falls in order to be born in such and such a city, and the die is cast. To die, one can think about it. Montaigne wanted to die on horseback, not in a city. A marvelous death without a roof. I myself do not know yet. Manhattan, subtitled Letters from the Prehistory. Manhattan, which looks like Calcutta, as we all know, would therefore be the site and the city of the prehistory of my story. I'll be able to think about it. It could be the first of my ruined cities. The place of the first ruins would therefore be American. Immediately I ask myself, what is the city of the prehistory of my prehistory? There is no simple city in my books and in my life. Nor is there, I'm sure, in your books and your lives. What is the first city? There are several, obviously. Let's say it would be Troy, in French, Trois, three. There are at least three cities in each of our cities. I was born in Oran, and I lived in a double city there. For historical reasons, Osnabrück had come to find shelter in Oran. On my double city, there was war and the shadow of Pétain, whom you certainly forgot, but I didn't, with Hitler. In our flat, Rue Philippe, a French name, I never knew whether I was in Oran, Algeria, or in Osnabrück, Germany. I said, I am from Oran. I should say, I'm from Oran with Osnabrück. From Oran in and out of Osnabrück. An impossibility made possible in a very specific place, 54 Rue Philippe in Oran, on the third floor. In Oran, Osnabrück hidden. Hidden Oran slipped into Osnabrück, anagrammatically. I lived within, without, and I still live, in my first house, where the Christians, the Jews, and the Muslims lived in keeping with the cruel reality. All refugees fresh from exile. Within was the kingdom of my father, the fair doctor, and in the street was France, a word in front of which all those living at number 54, the Spaniards who had fled from the war of Spain, the French, Jews, the Arab, not French, the German Jews, the Arab, were taking identity tests. Within number 54, there was a grace. I was in the one and in the other scene at once and separately, north and south, men and women, the masculine and the feminine, together and separately. My German mother and grandmother were telling about Osnabrück inside Oran. The staircases in the buildings of Osnabrück were using the staircases of Oran. I described the mythical structure of my native city in the book called Osnabrück. The moment when I was born in Oran, I was adopted by Osnabrück. My understanding began with two O's and two A's. I was living in Algeria, Allemagne, that's Germany, or in Allemagne, Algeria, in several languages. My countries begin with Al, Aleph, Alpha. Everything has always been a stage and a theater. This is peculiar to the city. The city is a theater on whose doorstep the place where the drama, that is to say the theater, is played out, stands erect. The theater, Shakespeare's, Aeschylus, the war theater, the one which translates the fate of the city into a work of art and rebellion, is a hut. It's a cabin, it's a room. It's Vera's room, maybe, which stands directing its words to the sleeping inhabitants in the city, right on the city gate against the death wall of the city. The theater which is put outside, the prophet directs its warnings to the deaf and blind theater which resides within the constructions put up inside. My double city with double childhood had a central stage. It so happens that my family lived twice in the first row of seats which overlooked the stage. Once in the Nikolai Ort building in Osnabrück, once in Oran, second gallery on the right, facing the stage of the Place d'Armes. And all the Algerians know the Place d'Armes. That's a place, it's a large quadrangle inside in the middle of Oran. One cannot imagine anything more theater-like, more Arabo-Greek, more Shakespearean. The backdrop, it's a town hall flanked by two lions. On the right, the theater. On the left, in the background, Plato's Pharmacy, run by my friends, pharmacists. Stage left, the Military Academy, where all that makes me enraged, ethically, astounded, politically, foreseeing, etc., happened to me. Up in the flights, the mountain on which Santa Cruz, that's what we called it, is seated, that's the sainted cross, which as a kid, since it was in Spanish, I thought was a kind of Saint Crumb of something, and I never realized it was the Catholic cross. And next to it was the Marabout, that is the grave of a Muslim saint. The theme of Oran as theater is how to enter. A theme with a double stage and a double plot, one reflecting, reliving, or sublating, translating the other. How to enter the desired city, which can never be found, always never there, veiled, commanded by a fort d'art. And how to enter among the inhabitants of the city, among whom one is, without being one. One finds oneself but crossed out, barred with bars, struck through, thrown, spat out. My theme, how to enter, how to arrive, and manage to enter, how to get out of the outside in which one is locked up within the inside. Now, this is you're going to tell me it's American. I tell you it's Latin. So, you know that arrive means reaching the rive, the shore. How to arrive, how to ever arrive. And in French, we share the same meaning in French and English, but at the same time, arriver in French means beautifully manage. So how to arrive, how to manage to enter, how to get out of the outside in which one is locked up within the inside. Kafka's theme. How to get out of the mouth of the cat. How to get out of the burning bush, which one did not enter. My theme, land as one may on the shore, on the other side of the sea, or in the middle of the country, one does not arrive. This is the theme, actually, of translation. One does not arrive in translation. There is the arrival or target language. One paces it, one rents it, one is a tenant, one adopts and is adopted, one tastes it, one tastes in it the delights of new surroundings, one is not of one's blood. At least this is my case. The idea of doing a translation frightens me, which, of course, makes me frightened now. The idea of rendering a text in another to secure, as Jacques Derrida says, the survival of the body of the original. Let me quote him. "It would thus secure the survival of the body of the original. Is not that what a translation does? Does it not secure these two survivals while losing its flesh during an operation of exchange, while elevating the signifier towards its meaning or its value, but while keeping the mournful, indebted memory of the singular body, the primal body, the unique body which it thus elevates, saves, and relieves or sublates? Since it is a work, even as we were saying, a work of the negative, this relevance is a work of mourning in the most enigmatic sense of this word, which deserves another development, which I, Derrida, attempted somewhere else, but which I, Derrida, must give up doing here. The measure of relève, of relief, the price of a translation is always what one calls meaning, even value, keeping, guard, truth as keeping, Wahrheit, bewahren, or the value of meaning. That is what elevates itself above the body, from which it frees itself, internalizes, spiritualizes it, keeps it in memory, a faithful, mournful memory. One does not even have to say that translation keeps the value of meaning, the meaning of meaning. The value of kept value is born from the mournful experience of translation, from its very possibility. The experience of Le Cercle Militaire, that is the military academy, I'll tell you a little about. It's an experience of primitive, archaic translation of one culture into another. I was 3. There were 2 worlds, and I knew it. What I did not yet know was that it was forever impossible for me to pass or live into the other world, impossible as much as forbidden, even if perchance one belonged. Even if perchance, by some extraordinary chance, I found or find myself overnight when I'm 3 in the world on the other side, even if by some extraordinary chance the ban was apparently lifted and I could believe the messages of the senses, believe that the portal opened, that I entered the garden, that I was inside. Even if I could believe, and I had believed, that by entering Canaan I would become an inhabitant of the inside of Canaan. Now, let me drop the metaphor. I was 3, and it was the war, and my father suddenly became an officer. He used to be a doctor, he became an officer. So that the military academy opened its large gates in front of us, and we were admitted in the only garden in Oran. I thought we were admitted. And there I crept around worms and children. And strangely enough, I just couldn't reach at the other children who were around. They were swinging on swings and speaking above my head, and I tried to come into contact with them, but it didn't work. Until the time I realized that I needed a shibboleth, and I found it out after a while, after a number of days, and the shibboleth was stems. They were all speaking about stems, and I discovered, I was 3, that all those big kids on the swings exchanged or collected stems. So I thought, now I know. I have to pay my entrance into common childhood by bringing stems. So I go up to the children, I say, if it's stems, I have so many stamps in my house, which was true because my Jewish family was disseminated throughout the world. So we would receive stamps every day from everywhere in the world. If it's stamps, then I can bring stamps to you. And a big girl who was about 5 spat on my head and said, "Liar!" I didn't know why she said liar. So she explained to me, all Jews are liars. It was the first time I heard about the word Jew. And so I discovered that I was all Jews are liars. And there is the beginning of my philosophy. Because I started wondering what I should decide. Should I bring stamps and bend to the tyrant and lose honor? I had a very strong sense of honor, that the one you have when you're 3. Or should I not bring stamps, keep my honor, and make all Jews liars? So that's the double bind. So I went out of the garden, and I won't tell you what was decided in my head, because I had to take a decision. And fortunately, a couple of months later, we were expelled from the garden, because suddenly my father was no longer a doctor, no longer an officer, he was a Jew. So, that's the secret and the key to cities. You believe that a portal is opened, that you enter the garden, that you're inside. Even if I could believe and had believed, you never actually reach the inside. And this is not, of course, reserved for Jews. You can exchange along the chain. Here I could believe my definition as a foreigner, different from others, would thus have ended. The outside, which was in me, had from then on stayed outside the garden. This being of the outside, dehors, I could think I had stowed it in a cupboard from the outside. This state of banishment from birth would have stopped at the portal, I had believed. It will be enough, it is going to be enough, I thought, for me to enter the garden, to take a few steps, for the internal mutation to keep up with the change already performed by my personal envelope. Let's say I was expecting a birth of myself to be born in the garden, my being brought into the world to bring myself into it. I felt full of promise. I squatted in the paths of rich earth lined with flower beds, and it was not coming. The sudden magical metamorphosis was not coming. I took the entrance examination in the language or in the codes of the other so many times in my life. Each spectacular failed attempt, working through the voice, signs and discourses, I told 10 times and shall still do so 10 or 100 times, my attempts, my failures, my obstinacies, for all the wounds and all literature will be drawn from these dramatic moments later. How aged 3 I was initiated into as much negative philosophy as there is in Dostoevsky. I killed and was killed, I was inside and I wasn't. How aged 4 I had the honor of singing Maréchal, nous voilà. Maréchal, here we come, which was the fascist song that children would sing in the street, and I learned it out of a pleasure of doing like all the other children, and how my father exorcised me. How aged 5 I saw marching in with great pomp those that enter by right and might, as in Shakespeare, the Americans, De Gaulle, Fortinbras, Henry V, General Giraud, all parading in tanks and on horses, right in front of my sandals. How I was on the balcony, a hen by my side, the hen, the one hen that we had, and its egg, like a kind of Scandinavian divinity, which follows the human world events while crying powerlessly, how I danced on the stage of the Oran Theatre, almost blind, following the thick chalk strokes drawn for me on the floor so I would not hurl myself into the pit, a scene which started over and over again all my life as a puppet. Last time it was at the National Library. 2 years ago I was dancing, or 3 years ago I was dancing on my words, clinging to my paper and not seeing anything. How each time I've been inside and I was radical outside. When I entered the university, I came in by the way out. I could add that this movement of the needle, which pricks, passes, enters, exits, pricks again, or of a fish, is my signature. I will always be found at the door. I know all the secrets of doors and keyholes. Now I'm going to talk about the hole in the door, this pupil on the face of the wood through which one must imagine looking, for it's while sneaking a furtive glance, as I've just been initiated to by Jean-Michel and Aaron, looking at Étant donné. It's while sneaking a furtive glance between all these marvelous words of the locks and keys of the psyche, from the serrure, the French serrure, the serrure, which clasps the key, a little marvel of eroticism, to the bold striking plate mortise, the whole scene which translators play ceaselessly, and which make of me, as a translator, a born locksmith. All this has been actually illustrated by Maria without her knowing it. Thus it is while threading one's way and while twisting and turning that, following my child mother wherever she went, I never stopped moving from Oran to Osnabrück, from Osnabrück to the Nibelungen and back. When my mother and thus myself were 6 years old, there was an Osnabrück epiphany through the keyhole, an epiphany in the Judeo-German world. One day my mother, and therefore I, saw through the keyhole of the bedroom door in Osnabrück a whole station. A population of dwarfs was busying itself, loading and unloading a train. Then the train left. When my mother believed she saw, I also believed I saw it. Osnabrück is to believe to have seen. And there is no difference between believing one sees and seeing. Where were these active dwarfs from, who were carrying promised yet unavailable treasures? Later on, I had my own station, my trains, syntax, rhetoric, poetics, and a profusion of verbal dwarfs. We had seen the journey of language. I said head. I will add the plane to the train, naturally. Travel tickets spring from language. All of us here today, no matter how glued we may sometimes be at our tables, we are on a journey and traveled. Send journeying, we pass through the keyholes of sentences, through the doors of words, through the panes of frames, I mean the window panes and the panes, through Maria's puzzle book of disseminated words on unframes. Two words about Osnabrück. This city has a twin, actually. And twin is a city called Münster. In two cities at once, the Treaty of Westphalia was signed. Europe starts here, of which I'm very proud. All the future of the world passed through a tiny city in 1648. Oran, Osnabrück, city worlds, world cities, have I ever seen them? Has Maria ever seen her originary city, I wonder? Except through recreating it. I desired to see them face to face. I think I never saw Oran. I was too short-sighted. I left it. I never came back. Will I be back? Have I ever seen Osnabrück? That's the enigma. I think I went there with my grandmother, Omi, in 1952, although I have no proof. We were again in Germany for the first time, I think, but maybe it's a dream. But dream is also a reality. Osnabrück, Jerusalem, or next year to Osnabrück? From the 1990s onwards arose the thought of going to Osnabrück in reality, to get lost now or previously. I still have not been there. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to say I still have not been there. Always, I don't go there. It would be terrible if I didn't go, I say to myself. It would be terrible if I went. When I completed Osnabrück the book, or when Osnabrück was done, that is, cooked, if I can say so, I only had to resurrect the small city, which had turned into my mother's book. That was the least I could do. But before telling you what happened to my trip to Jerusalem, Osnabrück, I must introduce you to you our Osnabrück as it, I experienced it through the stories my mother and my grandmother told. According to me, that is to my mother and grandmother, it was a gigantic Jewish city, some Lodz or Odessa, until the day when I discovered that Jewish Osnabrück was made up of 450 people or so, up to the days of Nazism, about 50 families. That must be the number of families in the Iliad. I started writing the book of what remained of Osnabrück. It was a book called Benjamin à Montaigne. And when I completed this remainder, I said to my mother and her sister, both aged more than 90, next year in Osnabrück in reality. Yes, yes, we all said, yeah, yeah, yeah. Nobody wanted to go. Nobody said to nobody that nobody wanted to go. We thought of going to Osnabrück during a whole year. And when the day came to do the suitcases, we undid them. But for a year, I was afraid of the end. The end of the sentence next year in Jerusalem. All the while, I was afraid of going to Osnabrück, and it was not only the book that would be done, complete, it would be life itself. Then my mother said, Eri, that's her sister, does not feel like going to Osnabrück. And nor do I. We're not interested. That day, I understood that for them, too, the return to the beginning is the end. The pilgrimage on one's own grave. We all felt relieved, but none of us said anything. We left everything outside translation. I could write a book on the impossible, what is deferred, promised, hoped for next year. I could write next year, we'll see. I never wanted to go to Jerusalem. I had a few cities where not to go, among which Prague, Pompeii, Jerusalem, cities too precious in fantasy to risk sinking them to the bottom of reality. 10,000 times in thought, in dream, in the imagination, Venice for Proust, how much does it cost him? To go there, not to go there? I've known for a long time that one does not go anywhere. It is the cities or the countries that come or do not come to you, that greet you or reject you. Cities are fateful letters. They only arrive lost. They only arrive posthumously. They engrave us. Though I never saw my cities with my eyes of flesh, I would at least have seen them with my ears. I inhabited their names, their sounds. I tasted them through all my senses, traveled them, spelling them out, recognized them in books like that of Maria, for instance. I received everything in or and ange, in gold and angel. I sucked their juice, their bones. I did not inhabit the name Paris. It never came to my mind. I cried enormously in Oran. I never laughed in Paris, never. I never got there, I have never been there. I'm not coming back from there. One of my lives eventually took place in Ris Orangis. The word nouns are our faithful commanders. One cannot escape them. Before fleeing from Paris, as I do secretly every day, I must still acknowledge a debt to it. It is in Paris, not in Algiers, nor in New York City, that I met Jacques Derrida. We are both in exile in Paris, both terrified, each of us in our own way, both hidden under the belly of the French language in order to try and escape from the Cyclops. This appalling condition, with its cunning remedy, must have contributed to bringing us closer. What we feared above all else was the word France. We wanted French, the French language, and its abundant brilliance, but not France. We were each differently hidden pariahs who had stowed away from one clandestine state to another on board the Ville d'Alger. The Ville d'Alger, that's the name of the... When we were kids and not traveling by air, we would cross the Mediterranean on large steamers that were called Ville d'Alger and Ville d'Oran. And so I translate the city of Algiers and the city of Oran. Cities are also boats. Is there a more forceful metaphor? A boat which is a city, or rather a city which comes and goes from one end to the other. One left the city of Algiers on the city of Algiers for the city of Paris. The ground was shaking. One did not know one was in a metamorphosis. The being in a trance that we were was spewing its guts out. One was changing bodies. Later on, when I went the United States for the first time, and since it was said that here over there I would be admitted into literature, I voyaged myself between two lives on the France, a fine steamer that was a paquebot. My languages, I say that in the plural, I cannot say, like Derrida, that I only have one language and it's not mine. I used to live in a languaged house, on the second floor Spanish with Mrs. Rico, on the third German with French, on the fourth French with Spanish, on the fifth the Hispano-French of our friends, Monsieur Emile and Madame Alice Garizio, sibling magicians, makers of potions and liqueurs for the Oran Town Council, and under the stairs of the house, Mohammed's Arabic. On the galleries, Spanish. All these languages tasted of spices, kitchens, and languages communicated. Fortunately, I desired them all except aubergines, I don't know why. I ate cabbage in German, Kraut, and carrots in cumin in Hispano-Arabic. I could, or I should, do a lecture on my way of cooking. It's exactly like my way of working a language. I can say that I've never wished to eat, speak pure French. I love and practice French as a foreign language. I never did anything but translate, that is to say, want to taste the taste of all the tastes, to trans-taste, try all the words, invent new mixtures, bring extremes closer, go to the roots, return to the sources of sources, try other arts, exchange, and taste other ways of trans-tasting, and particularly painting, installing other types of signifiers. Since we can no longer speak and draw in Montaigne's language, except by solitary enjoyment, Montaigne, who wrote foreign Greek, Latin, Italian, and French, we must then foreignize forward and on all sides. Since I was a child, I've always eavesdropped on words because they were all equally foreign to me. I wish you could see in reality one of Maria's beautiful, I don't know what to call it, work, inspiration, evocation. It's a word painted revolutionary. That's the word. Still today, as in Oran and at the Clos Salambier, I can hear the declensions, the gradations, the articulations of languages, just as they were pronounced once, long ago, for the first time. Still today, as in Oran, I'm hurled into the hunting of the stark, and what a delight when I hear at the end and of a long ride that the stark is a boudrem, after all. My grandfather, Samuel Sixou, who aged 11, went from the street barefoot to the counter, founded the family's first play of signifier without doing it on purpose by opening a hat shop bearing, where he sold hats and caps, and it bear the noble name of Iglif. Let me write Iglif in I don't know which language. So that's how my illiterate grandfather called his head shop. And it, of course, it looked extremely modern and luxurious, and we called it Iglif in French. That's how I started in English, actually. First, hieroglyphs. Later on, I found it hard, then a pleasure, to move from my language gem toys to English and school German. What languages so much alive and role were for me first refused to let itself be spelled. I thus started and ended up by always having two languages to play with, one having come to me by air, the other, Schemblable and Freer, arriving by letter. I don't know whether you know Wilhelm Busch. Those who are of German stem probably have heard of Wilhelm Busch. It's not your Busch. It's Busch, B-U-S-C-H. And I claim that there's only one Busch, it's Wilhelm Busch. When I was 6 years old in Oran, Wilhelm Busch was my other Bible. Homer, the Bible, Wilhelm Busch. Wilhelm Busch is the Iliad. Let me write Wilhelm Busch. He's a genius, I tell you. So, Wilhelm Busch invented art, cartoons, and Homer. I adored him. His Hokusai, his Daumier, his Victor Hugo, his Blake and Chaplin for children and criminals. And his heroes, Max and Moritz, in other words, my brother and me, more than once fell into the impenetrable bush as scoundrels and as rogues, as Derrida would say, and as dogs. Now, let me introduce you briefly to Plish and Plum, our fellow four-legged creatures, as translated into German by my mother. But I won't read all the book, it will be too long, so only a couple of lines. First chapter, translated by my mother. A pipe in his mouth, from the German. A pipe in his mouth, underarm, two young dogs, that old Kaspar Schlich was carrying, he can smoke awfully, but though his pipe is glowing, oh, how cold is his nature. What for, say his words, what do I need this breed for? Does it perhaps give me pleasure? Not at all, is my reply, but when there's something I don't like, get rid of it is my principle. In front of the pond he stands still, for he wants to drown them. Anxiously, with their legs, the two young quadrupeds thrush about, for the inner voice speaks, this affair I don't trust. Whoops! One is sent flying already, plish! There it slips into the water, oops! The second right behind, plum! Thereupon disappears. Job done! Shouted Kaspar Schlich, puffing and going away. Now, this is how I was initiated to sadism, to politics, by Wilhelm Busch, born 15th of April, 1832, at Zuwindsal, doing silly things with language. How my mother, a genius for military doggerel, translated him during the war, during the Second World War, just as she also translated the time into puppets. This is how we got the theater of dolls with bodies made of electric wire, about this size, among which some little Hitler was lashing out. My father, a marvelous speaker of French, set out about learning an invented German language, a kind of hilarious pantomime, alien German. It's not Joyce, but he who initiated me into embodied wordplay, into transubstantiation, into signifying acrobatics. So let me initiate you in turns to acrobatics in language. At table in Oran, we played at languages. And what we did was follow the explanation of my father. He had realized that my grandmother and my mother would all the time say, ich weiß nicht. That's German. Ich weiß nicht means I don't know. Ich weiß nicht. Schweiß is sweat. So my father heard that my mother and my grandmother would all the time say, when asked the questions, sweat. For I don't know. So when he was asked something he didn't know, he would say. So I was initiated into homophony and homonymy by the sweat of my father, sweating it out as he was translating himself into my mother's language. Ich weiß nicht, I do not know how this primer scene of acrobat translatability, which inaugurated my eyes of writing, how I could decide which of my languages was the most motherly, that of my father, great specialist of tongue-in-cheek, or that of my mother. Why am I telling you these stories? I fear that the idea of city is my overexcitement, my hyperviving. At the beginning of art, of all art, there is a city. It's a city to be destroyed. That's what literature is. It is about the destruction of the city. The destruction of the city, the deconstruction of the destruction of the city, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? It is a bad thing which causes an art, a sorrow that causes. Art or literature is a field of destruction, a field in ruins, the song of ruins, the archive song of ruins. I feel about Maria's work that she is in a way archiving, strangely, in a spectre-like kind of newly invented virginity. The archives of ruins out of which her author rises, of which there are so ruined that she herself doesn't know about the origin of those ruins. I could also tell you about the first bombarded, gutted city I saw. Actually, it was London in 1950. It was still eviscerated. There I felt my first emotion of a foreign language in my mouth. First kiss, to speak the other language, to suck its phonemes, to appropriate and snap up the most common idioms, to enter a language whose walls have collapsed without the effort of knocking at the door. I entered the English language as an innocent conqueror, and I helped myself without plundering. I loved to say gorgeous or tremendous. I reveled with the sounds of visa words in my throat. In other words, these shibboleths through which one is admitted into the camp of a teenage gang. From London to Manhattan, Londres, as we say in French, there will be then only one step left later. Londres, London. I was 13, I lived in Golders Green, London. And that's something curious, the fate of this proper noun, which is so proper to England, submitted translation, like a certain number of other names of capitals. Gallicide, we say Londres, whereas others aren't. We don't say Nouvelle York. Why London? We dare not. Why London? Why not Berlin or Madrid? Why Prague and why not New York City? And what of Algiers? I lived in a city brought before a translation tribunal for on-the-spot colonization. I went to Manhattan by sea and in text. I went there to the letter, to the word. I go to Manhattan as one goes to Monomotapa, this invented country where the true friends live, as La Fontaine tells us, if there is such a thing. I go there in pursuit of Joyce and following Kafka, himself following Karl Rossmann on the Hamburg, me following Benjamin Jonas from Osnabrück on the France, like my grandmother's brother on the Hamburg. I'm always already in text when the Statue of Liberty appeared to me in a sudden burst of light and everything was already written. One cannot talk about Manhattan. One can only try and write it in translation. One writes it and that's not it. It's on this word, it's on this Manhattan, on this Leviathan, or Dreamiathan, that is dreamt, that this paper was suddenly interrupted by Jacques Derrida's departure. I went there so often with Jacques Derrida, or at the same time as Derrida. We were going there, that is to say, actually by plane on October the 9th, 2004. During the whole of September, we said to each other and wondered, shall we make this journey to New York City? Can we do it? And by dint of wondering and conjuring up, we made the journey 100 times without doing so in reality. We had already outlived 9/11. We had suffered it, thought it, turned it inside out in every direction, transformed the two towers into ghost characters in our works. Yet another loss of a member of our body, of a family member. Then I lost Jacques Derrida, my double, myself same. One believes one has lost everything, but one can still lose what one has lost. One can still lose even more. I have never been to New Orleans, I must say, and yet I lost it. Yet another city which not only its inhabitants lose, but us too. yet another city, another buried Babel, another destroyed Troy, another city not to be forgotten. If Jacques Derrida were here, we would have circulated amongst us the legend of N.O. We would have deconstructed the no, relaunched the yes to life. I would have reinscribed the or in Orleans, in Oran. Each city lost or doomed is the first Jerusalem. But maybe he's here after all, I don't know. He's maybe. Each time unique, the end of the world, as he would say. There are lots of unique times. Because we are the subjects of memory and of metaphor. There's only one city, there's only one mother, but each city bears within itself the face of another city. Each city is haunted by another city, as Vera's room is haunted by all the rooms we have in our hearts. Because we are beings, actors or spectators of both, who officiate at the sacrificial scene which the world is, as Shakespeare used to say. Why did I suddenly decide to speak to you about cities in a place which is dedicated to art, the search for the secrets of creation? Because the work, the ideal dreamt work, does not exist without its stage, its support, its subjectile, its earth, its scene. The stage of the visual work of art is double. First, the work, painting, photo, installation, sculpture, everything that Maria does, is born in a genealogy, in a vast time, a sort of library landscape, which remembers and forgets, which keeps and brings back to life all the previous works. Second, the other stage is its genetic geography, its spatial context, its urban political site. We are heirs and haunted unknowingly. We are the descendants of a body city. What I do or dream or live, what I flee from or find back in Philadelphia, as well as in Manhattan or Algiers, results from the cross between my cities and my lives. I found and lost beings in Chicago. In Chicago, I am both Chicagoan and Chicagoan by necessity. And what to say about New Orleans and about Prague or Poland, where Maria is looking for something. Beyond the thousands of political reflections which spring from the catastrophe, there is the specter of the flood. I hope it's not going to happen here. And the themes of chaos and hospitality. It's the 20th time in my existence that I have to return a figure to a city and its inhabitants, that is to say, to a shattered, disjointed, exiled people. We, all of us, we owe New Orleans a reply, New Orleans being a metaphor for all others. There will be others. We must invent the answer, politically, of course, and artistically. Not forget it, not bury it, translate it, recall it, continue to live it. We must work towards the end, with the end, by transfiguring it and traversing it.